You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Made it to a Thursday, hour one with the guys. Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Glad to have you on board. You can watch the program all 3 hours for free on Peacock. Download the app. Say good morning to Chat Row and our great radio affiliates around the world. Almost 370 affiliates. Yes, around the world. Not just around the nation. Around the world.
Brussels, we crush it.
Yes, we do. Can't walk down the street in Brussels.
Remember that meet and greet in Brussels?
Oh, it was great.
We almost didn't get you out of there.
No, I was lucky. I felt like One Direction. Yeah, maybe the Beatles. Maybe No Direction. You know, what a buzzkill. Came in today all excited about the Masters, ready to go, early tee times. And I go, wait, those are highlights of previous Masters. What happened? We got rain in the forecast. They had lightning and thunder in the forecast as well. And yet some big names are going to be teeing off early. Plus, also understand this. With daylight savings time, you have probably 2 hours less time, daylight time, in Augusta. They're going to have to wrap all this up before 5 o'clock East Coast time. And normally they'd go to around 7, 7:30 when you're playing in April. Now with the Masters playing in November, maybe 5 o'clock at the latest there. They're going to try to cram all this in. Then you get to the weekend. You got college football and the NFL as well. And it might be a little dicey to get all of this in over the next 4 days. But we'll keep an eye on what's going on there. Any updates with the weather and some of the bigger names teeing off, we'll clue you in on that. Yes, Paulie?
I have to get this out right now. Quick five-minute poll question. Would you rather have the Masters pushed back because of rain today, tomorrow, and the next few days, so the final round is played in its entirety on Monday afternoon, so it's not up against the NFL on Sunday afternoon? Or would you rather have the final round of the Masters on Sunday so you could flip back and forth with the NFL?
It doesn't matter to me. It feels like we've moved everything around. So if you move the final round of the Masters to Monday, all right. But what happens if you're moving an NFL game or something else to Monday or Tuesday? But yeah, I'm fine with that. I just want to see it played. I want to see how it looks, how it sounds, and how Tiger plays, Bryson DeChambeau. So however they do it, whenever they do it, as long as they're able to do it and complete it. Yes, McLeod.
So the NFL, and I heard this on Red Zone, they have the fewest 1 o'clock games of any week this season. They only have 5 1 o'clock games, and they push most of their games to 4 o'clock to try so you can fit 5 1 o'clock and 6 4 o'clock and the Sunday night. So you could have both, and they're really bad games at 1 o'clock.
Well, CBS has to have that window to be able to carry this, and that's why they probably said, can we move our games to 4 o'clock? Fox doesn't care. And Fox still has their game of the week on Sunday afternoon at 4:25. Yeah, McLeod.
Yeah, so look at these games. Eagles, Giants, Jaguars at Packers, Washington at Detroit, Texans, Browns, and Bucks, Panthers. That's a good one, though.
Yeah, I guess.
They just played, yeah.
Yeah, I guess. And then you got a game coming up tonight, oh, by the way. It's the Colts and the Titans. McLovin sent me a note. He goes, hey, just want to let you know, the two best players probably in this game are guys to keep an eye on. They're defensive players. And I go, wow, that's the way to sell it.
Yeah, it's not even like pass rushing defense. It's not like T.J. Watt and Aaron Donald.
Is this DeForest Buckner?
Yeah, I guess he's transformed that Indianapolis Colts defense, and he's amazing. But he's a defensive tackle, so we don't even notice.
And is this Simmons with the Titans?
Yes, this guy, and there's two Simmons in the NFL, but Jeffrey Simmons, who has been a slow burn, is emerging as a star.
Oh,
but,
my gosh.
I mean, you know, you sometimes yell at me for being too mean to the AFC South, but you have to admit, from an optics standpoint, it's hard to get fired up about AFC South matchups.
Yes, if this was a game played at 1 o'clock on Sunday, nobody would watch. Nobody would care. But it's a standalone game, and that's what you want. Because we focus on what you do either really well or really bad. But I don't know if I could sell this. If I'm Fox's voiceover guy tonight, Jeffrey Simmons and the Titans versus DeForest Buckner and the Colts. You like sound defensive line play? Tonight, the Colts. DeForest Buckner versus the Titans, Jeffrey Simmons.
Bum, 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 bum. Bum, 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 bum.
Oh, sorry, Todd. I took your...
I don't like when you do that. Okay. That's my thing.
No, my bad. My bad. I got carried away. I'm excited about some solid defensive line play.
I like when you're excited.
Coming up tonight. Yes, McLovin.
When Simmons sets the edge on that defense.
Oh, man. When
you were looking at your Super Bowl picks, did you consider either of these two teams? Were the Titans in your mix?
More so than the Colts.
I don't, but you've been a fan of the way the Colts are building. I mean, you
but
love
I don't,
Quentin Nelson.
I don't want Phillip Rivers. I like Phillip Rivers. Fun interview. I don't want him as my starting quarterback. But I do think they're building something there. They got a good coach, good GM. I just didn't like this, hey, let's bring in Phillip Rivers for 1 year. And it felt like you could have brought in somebody else who gave you a little bit more of a future there. Yeah, McLovin.
Yeah, like you mean you're not talking about Jacoby Brissett. You're talking about something new down the road.
Well, as I told you, they were trying to get Jordan Love. And I don't know if they would have brought in Jordan Love and he would have played right away if they drafted him, or they would have worked him into the lineup at some point. But that's why I was told the Packers went up and got Jordan Love, because the Colts wanted Jordan Love. This program brought to you by 1-800-Flowers.com. Safest way to celebrate fall birthdays this year. 1-800-Flowers.com. Right now, order a dozen multicolored roses, an extra bouquet. You get all of that for just $29.99. To order, go to 1-800-Flowers.com. You'll see the radio icon. Enter code Patrick, and you're good to go. College football games around the country are being postponed this weekend for COVID-related reasons. I've got the list here of games that have been postponed. Some have been canceled. Ohio State, Maryland has been canceled. Their head coach, Ryan Day, the Buckeyes head coach, will join us coming up final hour of the show. Air Force, Wyoming, canceled. Alabama, LSU, postponed. A&M, Tennessee, postponed. Missouri, Georgia, postponed. Mississippi State, Auburn, postponed. Memphis, Navy, postponed. And Louisiana, Monroe, Arkansas State, postponed. What has been a trickle of games has suddenly become a tidal wave here. It's a crucial time for colleges to assess what is the best strategy and how to proceed. And as usual, the SEC is front and center. They've already had to postpone several marquee matchups coming up this weekend. Unlike the Big Ten and the Pac-12, the SEC didn't hesitate when they saw the opportunity to play this fall. They jumped on it. But they also built in a little more wiggle room when you had some postponements here. Pac-12, Big Ten do not have that. And Ohio State is really running the risk of not being able to play for the Big Ten championship. It's strange. Could Ohio State still play for the national championship, be in the playoffs, and not be in the Big Ten title game? Because you could have a situation where Indiana represents the Big Ten or is the Big Ten championship team. But is Indiana better than Ohio State? They play each other coming up next week. But here's Ohio State missing the game against Maryland. Nothing to do with Ohio State. It's Maryland that had the COVID test. Now, Alabama looks like a title contender. Everybody would agree. Florida A&M have a shot at the college football playoffs. But the SEC's got to explore every option right now. And the rest of college football normally follows whatever the SEC does. And hopefully the trends become more positive and the SEC and the other conferences can finish their seasons. And I want to ask Ryan Day, the Ohio State head coach, did you think about going out and scheduling somebody? Remember Nebraska was going to do this? And Nebraska was going to have UT Chattanooga short notice, and I'd gotten word on this. And keep in mind, Nebraska was trying to go rogue before the season started, and then they thought, well, hey, we had this cancellation. Can we go out and get somebody? And the Big Ten said no. And what I found out was Ohio State and Michigan were on Nebraska's side because, what I was told by a source, they thought if they get into a situation, they want to be able to go out and schedule somebody. Just like this weekend. So Ryan Day, the Ohio State head coach, will join us a little bit later on. I don't know if he's coming on for that reason to tell us that they're thinking about or they thought about scheduling somebody. I'm just curious, what if they only play five games? Are they able to qualify? Is that enough for the playoff committee? Playoff committee is also about business. In fact, it's all about business. It's all about popular teams, eyeballs, and Ohio State brings a big fan base there. Yes, Seton O'Connor?
Think about how many teams would have been eligible for the college football playoff if you only had to play five games.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, through the history of college football, how many teams got right down to that last game and then lost to, like, Pitt or somebody? And you're like, oh, great, we blew it. If you only had to go 5 games?
Yeah, Paul.
Let's put something together, Dan. We got Ryan Day of Ohio State on. Let's call over to, you know, BYU, see what their coach is doing this morning. Maybe we can get a little something together. Call Provo, fire up the jet, send it to Columbus, see what happens. BYU, you pull off the upset, you're in the national title picture.
It feels like if BYU wanted to play Texas A&M, might be a little easier to do that than do something in the Big Ten.
Let's go big.
But look, BYU would be all in on this. If BYU would somehow be able to beat Ohio State or get that opportunity to play them, they need a big quality win. They have two more games, and they're not against big opponents. Or Texas A&M wanting to get into the Final Four. I think we're going to see a scenario where one of these schools is going to say, can we go out and schedule somebody else? Our game got canceled. BYU's got the week off. Alabama's got the week off.
Let's go.
Yeah, I don't think it's that easy. But four SEC games postponed, Ohio State, Maryland canceled. They will not make that up. Yes, McLovin.
It's weird that Jim Harbaugh's not coming on and arguing for more games. In fact, he's like, I look at their schedule, November 21st at Rutgers. He's praying for a postponement for that game.
I think Coach is thinking safety first. I think that's really smart for Coach Harbaugh. Safety first. Colts-Titans, Masters underway. McLovin has a poll question or two.
I do.
Do you want to give it to me?
We have a series of poll questions. Okay. Your favorite question. Basically, whose future would you want? Dun, dun, dun. It could be a game. Which one do you want first, NFL or NBA?
Oh, give me NFL, and then I'll get to the NBA with what's going on with the Rockets.
Okay, this is actually a leftover from yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Whose future would you rather have, the New York Football Jets or the New England Patriots? I think we should put that one up to see what people say, and I'll let you think about it.
Yeah.
The other two football ones, whose future would you rather have, the Dolphins or the Chargers, because Tua and Herbert play each other this weekend? It's a referendum on the draft, you might say.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd probably rather have the Jets' future, knowing that they're not going to be any good and they get Trevor Lawrence. At least I have a once-in-a-generation, once-in-a-decade quarterback. At least the prospects of that. And as much as I like Sam Darnold needs to, you know, leave the Jets and maybe, you know, salvage a career here. I don't know where the Patriots are going here. I don't know how long Belichick stays there. Is Cam your quarterback? You got to have a quarterback. And if I start with a quarterback and if I have trust in the front office, I don't have trust in the ownership with the Jets and I don't have trust with the coach. But if you said, I can get let's throw out Eric Bieniemy from the Chiefs. I get somebody like that, offensive-minded, forward-thinking, explosive, spread it, get, you know, speed out there, and then you tell ownership, stay out of the way. All right. Because I'm guessing some receivers are going to want to play with Trevor Lawrence. You're trying to build your offensive line, get rid of some of that dead weight. You know, they got rid of Jamal Adams, who didn't want to be there, Le'Veon Bell. I would say the Jets right now. Yeah, Paul.
The Jets are going into the offseason. They're probably going to get Trevor Lawrence. They have two first-round draft picks. They have $83 million in cap space, second only to the Jaguars.
Yeah. But it's what you do with the cap space that matters.
But the combo of a rookie quarterback deal and a ton of cap space, it's almost on a plate for someone to do right.
But have you ever seen somebody when they do something to their house and they've got all the money in the world and you go, Why would they do that? That doesn't make any sense. Wait, what? That's what happens with some of these teams. We got all this cap space, and then you go, but why did you do that? Like the Knicks. The Knicks, you know, they somehow will take Russell Westbrook and go, yeah, this is our future. Russ turns 32 today. And, hey, this makes us relevant. We got Russell Westbrook. It doesn't make you relevant. Like, Oklahoma City was relevant because Russ was putting up triple-doubles, and we had not seen that in 50 years with Oscar Robertson. Now all of a sudden we're like, okay, we get the triple-double thing. That novelty is over here. But here are the Knicks going, yeah, let's get Chris Paul. He's almost too old for us. The perfect time to get him. He's 30. He's going to be 35. Let's get Russ, who uses his legs. He's 32. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Great game plan there. What else do you have, McLovin?
Just a point. The Patriots are right behind the Jets. They have the third most cap space.
Yeah.
So they could spend it. This is another whose future would you want? This debate is everywhere these days. Cardinals or Ravens, it's kind of like the Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson debate.
Whoa.
These people are saying Kyler's are more evolved. Lamar Jackson, because he's better at the passing game. You know, Kyler's passing stats are...
Boy, we moved on from Lamar Jackson quickly,
Lamar
didn't we?
Who?
Yeah. Wow.
You haven't seen... Oh, you... But basically, Kyler Murray's going to be old news soon. Next year, someone's going to come in. That's his shelf life now for a hot story.
And Lamar Jackson was on Rich Eisen's show yesterday, and I'm going to play this sound coming up where he says the defenses basically know what the plays are. When he goes to the line of scrimmage, they yell out what the play is. Whose fault's that?
Right, that's a red flag right there.
It would be.
You don't want that happening.
Yes. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address, dp at danpatrick.com. The former NFL player, Emmanuel Acho, the Fox Sports Speak for Yourself co-host, will join us coming up a little bit. I mentioned Ryan Day will join us. We'll check in with Augusta. Fascinating story. Well, I found it fascinating. And if you're sitting in your car or wherever you are consuming this, and I say, fascinating story about the sand at Augusta, you're probably going, boy, what happened to Dan? He's gone off the deep end. Yeah, the sand. It's a deep dive into the sand at Augusta. Fascinating story. It is. And having been in that sand at Augusta a couple of times when I played, it is the brightest sand that you'll ever play in. And there's a reason for that. Yes, yes, Paul.
You should have been cocky and say, you know, I've never really been in the sand traps at Augusta. I was right in the fairway, then on the green in three, and two, actually.
Yeah.
That must have been the day you shot 83.
Yeah.
83, I was in the bunker a couple of times.
Yeah, twice.
Yeah. When I shot 81, I was not in the bunker. Yes, McLovin.
I totally didn't remember that you'd played at Augusta.
Oh, really? Here, let me tell you. So first tee, I hit it left, and then I hit it to the right side. Oh, never mind. I always love when you ask somebody, hey, how'd you play today? All right, first tee, I hit a driver, and then I hit 143 in. I hit an 8-iron. I missed a 4-footer, so I 3-jacked, I bogey. Like, they'll give you the whole... If you've ever covered a golf event, the first thing that happens when the golfer comes in, they go, okay, go over your shots. And most of the golfers go over their shots without looking down at anything. They'll tell you yardage, club, result. But they do it for every shot that they had. Fascinating. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Emmanuel Acho is the former NFL linebacker, co-host of Fox Sports 1's Speak for Yourself, and has a new book called Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. Emmanuel, good to have you on. Let me start with that topic with Lamar Jackson. How is it that these defenses or a defense knows what Lamar Jackson and the Ravens are doing when they get to the line of scrimmage?
As a middle linebacker in the NFL, Dan, I can tell you, it's not that complicated. What do I mean? Well, last year, Lamar Jackson took the league by storm. So many of these NFL coaches hadn't seen the spread style run game. When I played at the University of Texas, I was playing against a guy by the name of Robert Griffin, who won the Heisman his senior year, my senior year. After you see it for a while, you understand, okay, if the back is offset to the quarterback's right and he's about 2 yards deeper than the quarterback, you're probably going to get an inside zone type of run scheme. If he's offset to the quarterback's right and he's even with the quarterback, you might get an option to the right. Based on depth perception of the running back, based on splits of the offense, you can pretty fairly anticipate what's going on. The problem, Dan, is simple. Last year, you only had about 3 days to prepare for Lamar Jackson if you were going to see him that week. This year, you've had about 3-4 months to prepare for Lamar Jackson all offseason. So I think you're starting to see the adjustment catching up to the Ravens.
Yeah, but if Lamar knows this, the defense knows this, then how is it that the Ravens aren't, you know, counteracting this?
Well, because you can actually only do so many things on offense, particularly if you live within a certain scheme. See, when you're going to get up against a guy like Andy Reid, he's doing ridiculous stuff, a ton of different formations, a ton of different pre-snap shifts and moves. But when you're going against the Baltimore Ravens, they don't do so much. They just do it excellently. And that's the difference. When I was playing against the Carolina Panthers in 13, 14, and 15 with Cam Newton, preparing for them was grueling. They had thousands of formations, hyperbole, obviously, but they could run so many different things out of those formations. The Ravens, they keep it more simple. They just execute at a higher level. There's a pro to that, but also a con to that as well.
If I gave you their futures right now, Lamar Jackson or Kyler Murray?
I would probably say, that's so tough. Let me say Lamar Jackson. I know a lot of people are saying Kyler Murray, and I really like Kyler Murray. I probably, though, like Cliff Kingsbury and his offensive mind more than I like what they have going on in with Greg Roman and with the Ravens. Remember, this is the problem, Dan, when you're talking about sports. So many people look at just the incubated team. Oh, well, give me Patrick Mahomes over Deshaun Watson. Well, sure. But what if you would have had Patrick Mahomes drafted to Bill O'Brien's Texans and Deshaun Watson drafted to Andy Reid's Chiefs? Like, it's never apples to apples when people try to make these comparisons.
And also, when we start to handicap, like, how long it takes for somebody to take that next step, and, you know, it feels like receivers, it takes them a little while to get the game doesn't come to them as easy as some of the other positions there. Brandon Marshall, I remember telling me, it took him 6 years for the game to kind of come to him. Quarterbacks, it's coming to you right away. DK Metcalf, it's sort of coming to him right away that if I said, I'll give you any receiver for the next 5 years, who are you taking? And most people are probably taking DK Metcalf. How is it that he slipped by everybody in the first round?
Well, as a college football analyst, remember, DK Metcalf was often injured. Yeah. A.J. Brown was also on that team, receiver for the Tennessee Titans. A.J. Brown was probably a better collegiate receiver than DK Metcalf, many would argue, particularly because of health. Let's also not underestimate Russell Wilson. Tyler Lockett was supposed to be a gadget guy. Tyler Lockett in the Big 12 Conference, where I played college football, he was a return ace, return specialist. He had 200 yards receiving on 15 catches just 2 weeks ago. Let's not underestimate Russell Wilson. Doug Baldwin, what was he, an undrafted free agent? Turns into a perennial or a repeat Pro Bowler? Russell Wilson's also playing a great major factor in DK's success. And kudos to DK Metcalf for overachieving, if you will.
When did you start thinking about this as a career when you were playing?
Dan, I gravitate towards what I'm good at. In high school, I went to an affluent, all-white private school. I was supposed to be a national merit scholar. My parents born in Nigeria. I'm first-generation American. So, Dan, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to be a nerd, go to Yale, go to Harvard. I wind up being 6'2", 240 pounds. I was like, well, I guess we'll play football. While playing football, Dan, I was like, okay, I kind of understand. I was never the fastest. I was never the strongest, but I was typically the smartest on the football field. So I said, let me get into breaking down games, breaking down tape, because it's not what you know. It's what you can get the listener and the fan to know. And I realized I'm decently skilled at that, so that's why I moved into it.
What did Christian Okoye mean to Nigeria?
Christian Okoye, obviously the great running back for the Kansas City Chiefs. Everyone knows him as a Nigerian nightmare. Dan, my first email when I was a ninth grader in high school, it was NigerianNightmare@yahoo.com. First email, my very first one. So when you say, what does Christian Okoye mean to Nigerian Americans, to Nigerian football players, he's the legacy. And that legacy has since been carried on. Think about the NFL draft, Dan. Three Nigerian players were drafted in the first round. Obviously, Jeff Okuda, I remember him. I think Noah Igbogini, another cornerback from Auburn, and there was one more player who's slipping my mind. But think about what Christian Okoye started and how that legacy has continued to be passed down.
Emmanuel Acho, the former NFL linebacker, and he's the co-host, Marcellus Wiley, with Speak for Yourself. But the book is Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. When did you think about doing the book and why?
Yeah, Dan, after the racial tension going on in our world, I said, I have to do something to alleviate some of this. I'm a sports analyst, sure, but before I'm that, Dan, I'm a black man. And before I was even that, the world saw me as a black man. I was a human being. It's my job to leave the world better than I found it. I said, wait, I was immersed in white culture, Dan, at this all white private school growing up. Then I was immersed in black culture in the NFL and in college. I realized there's a color and culture issue, Dan. Like black people and white people, we communicate differently. And because we communicate differently, let me try to act as a bridge to allow my white brothers and sisters to understand some questions, answer some questions that they may never ask because they don't have black friends to ask them to, or a black group, or feel comfortable. So I said, let me write this book to help educate those that want to be a part of the solution in America.
What is the, I guess, top question that we should ask or that you want to answer?
Oh, that's such a great question. I think the top question, which is such a volatile topic, people talk about white privilege. Well, Emmanuel, I worked hard. How can you say I'm privileged? Dan, let me say this. I currently have famous person privilege. I was walking down the street in Beverly Hills, Dan. I walk into a restaurant. And they say, Emmanuel, I love your show. Your meal is on me. Dan, the meal was free, not because I'm black, not because I'm 6'2", because they knew who I was. So many people in America, I submit that privilege just means you have certain access to a space or certain immunity from a space because of who you are. So when you talk about white privilege, it's understanding that in America, I have certain immunity or certain access to certain spaces. It's not saying your life hasn't been hard. It's saying your skin color hasn't contributed to the difficulty in your life. I think, Dan, there's so many visceral reactions based on terms in our current society that really turn people off. But until we open up our minds of understanding, open up our hearts to understand, we won't really see the unity that we need. And let me say this real quick. I played in the locker room for the greater part of my life. And people say, well, Emmanuel, in the locker room, people look past race. Dan, they look past religion because we're all fighting towards a common goal. But in America, the reason we have so many divides, it's because we're not all fighting towards a common goal. We don't all realize oppression exists. Racism may exist. Systemic racism exists. So, Dan, if you're not fighting towards a common goal, then you end up fighting each other. And that is the difference between how in a locker room you can overlook your differences, but in the world we struggle to.
Why is it that in the moment there is this blowback or this anger or resentment with those Muhammad Ali, Martin Luther King? I even look at LeBron James, and I shouldn't be just singling out African-Americans. There are a lot of people who speak up on this topic, but it feels like it's after the fact we look back with reverence and admiration instead of in the moment. You know, I don't know how we're going to look back on Colin Kaepernick, because in the moment, and even now it's still volatile, I don't know 15, 20, 30, 40 years. I don't know how history treats him. Ali, they didn't treat him well. Martin Luther King was divisive as well. LeBron James, you know, today is divisive to a lot of, polarizing to a lot of people. Why is it we don't see what's in front of us or appreciate what's in front of us?
There's twofold. Number one, Dan, the old quote, you never know what you got until it's gone. But now let me dive a little bit deeper. No one likes to get uncomfortable in the moment. This is a sports show, so let's talk sports. University of Texas, I had a strength coach called Mad Dog Madden. He wore a huge gold chain around his neck that said Mad Dog. He was probably about 6'4", 300 plus pounds. Dan, do you think I liked my strength coach in college? Absolutely not. I didn't like when he was yelling at me. I didn't like when he was forcing me to do something I didn't want to do. I didn't like when he was making me wake up at 6 a.m. to run gassers across the football field in the hot Texas heat. Absolutely not. But as I've gotten older, I've realized, wait a second, everything he was doing for me at the time was for my benefit. But more importantly, everything Mad Dog, my strength coach, was doing for me at the time was for the greater good of the team. And I think the issue at hand is when you talk about guys like Dr. Martin Luther King, LeBron James, Muhammad Ali, the likes, what they're trying to do is for the greater good of the team. The United States, our team, which we're all on together. Now, you might not agree with some of their philosophies. You might not agree with some of their terms. I might not have agreed with all of these sets and repetitions my strength coach was making me do, but the intention was pure behind it. And I think really, Dan, we don't like to get uncomfortable. And that's why I wrote the book. And that's why we're starting to see some growth in our country.
Is there part of you that says, is my calling something above just doing sports and breaking down, you know, is Carson Wentz good enough to be the starting quarterback for the Eagles?
Oh, I so genuinely appreciate that question. Definitely. Dan, I've realized there is a difference between your career and your calling. See, your career is what you're paid for. Your calling is what you're made for. And while my career has been sports, X's and O's, LeBron James, Carson Wentz versus Nick Foles, who is better, who is greater, my calling has been trying to bridge racial reconciliation in this world. My calling has been trying to unite my Black brothers and sisters and my white brothers and sisters. I realized, Dan, this. I didn't play in the NFL to make a lot of money or to tackle people. I didn't go to this affluent top college preparatory school in high school to get a phenomenal education. I think, Dan, everything I've gone through in my life has led me to this moment, has led me to uncomfortable conversations with a Black man, has led me to this series, which over 70 million people have now seen in 5 months. My calling, Dan, is bigger than myself, and I'm just glad to be a vessel to be used in the moment.
The most important question I'll ask you, and the most important question you'll hear all day is, if it was you against Marcellus Wiley and only one guy one guy got out of the octagon, who would it be?
Well, first off, it would be me because Marcellus Wiley would tire out. Okay, he doesn't work out anymore. He's a little soft around the edges, if you know what I mean.
Wow.
And though he went to Columbia, Dan, I would outsmart him because I have 2 degrees, one being in sports psychology. So I would use all his tactics against him. Don't let him fool you, Dan.
He's got old guy strength, though. He's got
He has grown man strength. Without him kids, he got grown man strength.
Good luck with the book and also with the Fox Sports 1 with the Speak for Yourself. Thank you. And tell Marcellus we said hello. Thank you, Emmanuel.
Of course. Thank you, my brother.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Got a lot of cancellations, a couple of postponements here. Not sure where we're headed, but here to help us with our compass is Ross Dellinger. He's Sports Illustrated senior writer covering college football. How did we get to this point, Ross, that we have 4 games in the SEC that are postponed this weekend?
Hey, sorry, guys. My internet connection's a little lost this morning.
Oh, I thought you were giving great thought to my question there.
No, you're going in and out a little bit on me, but I think I caught most of that. How did we get to this point, right? It's been a long few weeks and months, and it's been a roller coaster, right, in college sports in general. And everybody's kind of doing their own thing, or were doing their own thing over the summer, and then we kind of all came together lately to play, and now we're experiencing, you know, a second and third wave of the virus, and the SEC specifically is having one of those bad weeks that we expected.
But we're talking about contact tracing, and this isn't about COVID as much a positive test as it is just the contact tracing. Is that correct with the SEC?
That's correct. Yeah. In most cases, it's been about contact tracing at other schools and other conferences as well. It's the biggest hurdle, Dan, in completing a season. And physicians knew over the summer it would be. It's not the positive cases, but it's those high-risk contacts or those deemed to be high-risk contacts, which all conferences are going by the CDC guidelines, which is a person within 6 feet for 15 minutes. Is a high-risk contact. So you can imagine if you have one positive in a football building, you could have 5, 10, 15 high-risk contacts. And that's what we're seeing. We've got, there's roughly 10 positives of 7 of the 8 teams involved in a postponement in the SEC. There's roughly a combined 10 positives. Nobody has more than 4, I don't think. But it's the high-risk contacts around them that have been quarantined for 2 weeks. And it's a big hurdle right now in college sports is how to deal with this contact tracing piece. Of course, we know the NFL, you can test out of quarantine after 5 days. Can't do that in college.
I've got Ryan Day, Ohio State's head coach, on next hour. Could you see a scenario where Ohio State doesn't qualify to play for the Big Ten title game but qualifies to play for the college football playoffs?
I guess so. Yeah, conceivably you could. I think they lost a game, so they can't lose. I think it's 2 more, right? You have to play at least 6. So I guess Ohio State could be 5-0. Won't play in the Big Ten title. But the CFP, because you have that human element, these are people making this, there's no BCS formula, that knowing it's Ohio State, knowing what they've done in the past, seeing them through five games, I guess I didn't really think about that, but I guess that's possible.
But also trying to come up with a rationale for the College Football Playoff Committee. If I'm BYU or I'm A&M and I'm on the outside looking in, could I schedule a game? Is there a way I can add to my resume so I can be a little bit brighter, shinier to the playoff committee?
Yeah, you could, and we've seen that, right? It's been maybe earlier in the season we've seen that, but we've seen games scheduled a week out or 2 weeks out. While games are being played, games are being scheduled. We haven't seen that, I guess, in the last few weeks, but we did see it earlier in the year. I know there was some talk that, you know, could we get a BYU Liberty game or something like that? Like two undefeated group of five undefeated teams. Yeah, I mean, BYU could scramble and play a game. I think they have, I looked at their schedule recently, I think they have still two off weeks left. So conceivably they could schedule someone. The problem is would it be someone worthwhile? They're not probably going to get a power five in there. So it have to be an undefeated group of five, like a Liberty or Cincinnati.
Yeah.
For that matter.
Did the Big Ten make a mistake earlier? If a game got canceled, that you should be able to go out and schedule. And the reason why I bring this up, Nebraska was trying to do this a couple of weeks ago. And I had a source say that Ohio State and Michigan were on Nebraska's side because they realized they could be put in this situation. And here you have Ohio State's game against Maryland canceled.
I think this season, Dan, is about flexibility. We were on with the SEC commissioner yesterday, and he has a sign he said in his office that be flexible. This year in 2020, you have to be flexible. And the Big Ten has proven not to be flexible, yeah. Right? They're trying to play nine games in 9 weeks. That is obviously offers no flexibility. They would not allow teams to, as you mentioned, like Nebraska, grab another game. No flexibility there. So you're seeing that they're doing the opposite of some other conferences. The Big 12, the ACC, you've seen them be very flexible. The SEC to an extent, not as flexible. They had that one COVID kind of bye week and they're playing a conference only. So they haven't allowed that either. But you've seen a lot of conferences be flexible, and that's kind of the theme of this year. So I do think the Big Ten and even to an extent the SEC should be more flexible, or should have been more flexible, specifically with working in off weeks, more off weeks, yeah, into their schedules.
Why no talk of an 18 playoff this year, given what we need is flexibility?
Yeah, that was asked to the SEC commissioner yesterday. He brought up a good point. You add more games, they're tougher to complete. We're just trying to get through the games that are currently scheduled. So if you expand the playoff, it makes it more difficult, he said, to complete the playoff. And I think he's got a point. Look, we're on the path, and we've been on the path to expanding the playoff. You know, after the contract runs out, I have no doubt the playoff's going to be expanded. I really do. I mean, we knew, Dan, when they announced the playoff, it was four teams, and there are five Power Five conferences. We knew that was going to be an issue. And
yeah,
it has
but Ross, so, nobody said, hey, let's just make it like the BCS. It's one versus two. I mean, if we want to have the total safety precautions, just have one versus two.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about like this year?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if we're worried about safety protocols, safety first.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, flexibility, right? Yeah. I mean, just tweak it. Of course, we have to always think about the money, right?
That's what I was thinking about. I was thinking about the money with 18 playoff. That's why mentioning that.
Right.
Before I let you go, the Pac-12 is irrelevant. How long does this stay with the Pac-12? Not only this year, but in subsequent seasons. Ross, I think I lost you.
I'm sorry, Dan. My internet connection went out again on me.
All right. Well, thank you, Ross. Well, you won't be able to hear me say thank you, Ross, but I'll still say thank you, Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated senior writer covering college football. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Oh, okay. Let's bring in the Ohio State head coach, Ryan Day, in his second full season as the Buckeyes head coach. Coach, thanks for joining us. What game film are you looking at today?
Well, we got in early and we started on the Hoosiers. So just give us a few extra days, I guess. It's been crazy. It's been frustrating, but you know, we're just going to move forward and worry about what we can control and on in Indiana.
When did you hear the news that the game at Maryland was canceled?
Yeah, it was about 15 minutes before our team meeting. We always meet at 2:30, you know, for team meetings each day. And about 15 minutes before, you know, Gene let me know. And so we relayed the information to the team. And, just a tough day for our guys.
If you could schedule a replacement game, would you?
Yeah.
Because yeah, I look back at Nebraska, Coach, and I was told that there are other schools in the Big Ten that said, hey, you know what, we may be facing this scenario as well, that a game would be canceled, and you need to have that resume bulked up a little bit. Were you in favor of Nebraska being able to play somebody outside the Big Ten if a game was canceled?
Yeah, I was. You know, actually, I said that publicly, but especially when – it's hard to look at your team in the eye and tell them they can't play when they've done everything you've asked them to do. I guess you chalk it up to 2020. I know it's not as easy as just saying, hey, let's just go schedule a game. There's a lot of implications and different things that have to go into play. So I totally respect that, but certainly would be in favor of trying to figure out a way to get it done. But I also understand the complexity of it all.
Yeah, and I was wondering if you coaches had been able to talk to the Big Ten about this or – can you have a conversation now? Because you may run into this another time before the Big Ten title again.
Yeah, you know, we had a lot of conversations leading up to the season, weekly meetings with the Big Ten coaches. I mean, so many Zoom calls. I don't even know how many we had, but it was a lot. But then once you get into the season, it's hard because just all of your attention and time goes to winning the next game, getting the guys ready for practice. So it's hard to carve out time to have these type of conversations. We could pretty much leave that up to the ADs, the administrators. It just, your time gets tough during the week.
You got a good sense of how good your team is?
Not really. No. I mean, I think we have a chance, but without having spring ball, without having preseason, without the non-conference games, there's a lot of snaps that our team didn't have. And so we're trying to play catch up and get going with these snaps. And so I don't know. I think we have a chance. I think we have some talent, but we need to play. We need to play games. We need to make mistakes. We need to work through those things and learn. And we're, you know, the only way to do it right now for us to play a little bit of this catch up is to practice better and practice against each other. Nothing replaces games, but we got to do everything we can in our power to practice and make sure every rep in practice is a game rep. But you know, I think this game, this week, looking forward to Maryland was an opportunity to take the next step. We'll just have to keep working and take that next step against Indiana.
What did you think of Tonga Vailoa?
You know, I thought he was playing well the last couple games. I think, you know, they did a great job of getting the ball out of his hand quickly, especially in the last two games. I think he's got some pretty talented receivers. And he just kind of has a little bit of that it factor. And it was going to be, you know, we're looking forward to playing him. But a lot of respect for that family. They're going, yeah, there's something magical about those two guys.
He's Ryan Day, the Ohio State head coach. If a scout called and said, tell me what Justin Fields' best trait is, what would you say?
I think that's what makes him special is there's several. I think when you look at him physically, he's big, he's strong, and he's fast. He's got a strong arm. But he has some just innate accuracy that is special. And, you know, you can't teach things like that. He sees it. It makes sense to him. Spaces make sense to him. He can anticipate what his receivers and defenders are doing. So accuracy is big. But then he also is very, very intelligent. And he can, you know, take a meeting to the field pretty quickly. So I think all of those things combined is what makes him special.
I had a scout tell me it's hard to assess Ohio State quarterbacks, and not just Ohio State, but other programs, because there's so much talent around them. Is that a fair – I don't know if you get this or you will get this. I watched Dwayne Haskins against Michigan at home. those receivers were wide open. I mean, it felt like he could do whatever he wanted. I didn't know how to assess how good he was or is, and I think Justin Fields will probably go through that as well. Can you see where scouts are going to go? How good is he, but how good is the team around him?
I mean, I think we have a lot of talent, and I think that you know, we do have good pieces around them, but that's why the scouts get paid a lot of money. Project. It's the same thing when we recruit quarterbacks in high school. If they come from a good program, you got to project the best you can and try to figure that part of it out. But we do. You're right. We have good players around, and that certainly helps.
What do you look for, though? Is it tougher, do you think, to see a quarterback playing in the NFL or a quarterback playing in college when you're recruiting?
You know, that's a great question. I think the high school part is probably the hardest because we don't get to spend as much time with them. Where in college, you know, these guys come in, they work them out. They really spend time with them. They get to know them. They can really do anything they want with them physically. You know, the scouts go and watch them play in games. We don't. And especially now with everything going on with COVID, we don't get to see these guys play live. And we don't get to work them out either. We're lucky if they come to our camp. And then we just try to do the best we can to figure out who they are as people and watch their film. So I think it's a lot easier to project them into the NFL. Now, they still have to go play. And there's a lot that goes with that. And that's not easy. So it's not easy for either situation. But it's hard in college because you don't really get to go work people out. You don't get to evaluate them in that manner. And so it's difficult.
Do your players know that you played quarterback in college?
Some of them do. I don't think all of them. I don't think some of them know exactly where I played either, but some of them certainly do.
What kind of quarterback were you at New Hampshire?
Chip would probably describe me maybe as an overachiever, great athlete. had to figure out ways to make it work because wasn't as talented as some of the other guys, which is makes sense probably why I'm a coach. Try to figure out the angles and the way to try to find an advantage. So, the first 3 years of playing was the first 3 years of Chip being a coordinator and cutting on the no huddle and the spread was kind of in its infancy. And so I was a guinea pig. Some days it worked, some days not so good. So, and I have some of the scars to show, but it was fun to be around.
The Chip you're talking about, of course, is Chip Kelly, who was offensive coordinator there at New Hampshire. How often, like on a daily basis, how often do you hear about Michigan?
A lot. I mean, it's just part of our life. I think not, kind of being in isolation of your home and then being in the Woody here, it's a little different. You don't get to see as many people anymore.
But like last year, how often you're on the street, your grocery store, wherever you are, how often are you hearing about Michigan?
Yeah, that's all. That's every day. It's at my son's bus stop. It's when my wife goes to the grocery store. I mean, it's every day.
I love it, but I grew up with it. But I don't have to hear it every day like you do.
Oh, yeah, it's the number one thing. I mean, your number one job when you get here is to be the team up north, and then everything comes after that. And so, yeah, the anxiety builds as you get closer to the game for sure.
Well, you got a lot of time to figure out Indiana there, and thanks for joining us, Coach. We appreciate your time. Good luck the rest of the season.
No, thanks. It's great being here.
It's Ryan Day, Ohio State head football coach. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Sam Farmer of the LA Times had an article about the white sand traps at the Masters. They have 44 bunkers at Augusta. And for the last 50 years, they've been filling the sand with this white sand that they get a 4-hour drive from Augusta up north in a small town called Spruce Pine. And they find that they've got this sand that they make that makes it look like sugar bowls. So they used to get 13 train cars that would haul coal. They would bring in this white sand, but because they had coal in the train cars, that would dull the white sand, And they eventually brought in new train cars to bring the sand into Augusta every year. And it's a special sand that they make. And only in this place, they actually ship it to Dubai. And as one of the people there say, we actually are so good, we sell sand to somebody in the desert. But, you know, it's the brightest sand in the world, according to Tiger Woods. Yes, Paul?
I was reading about this sand, and it's processed, so it's not round. It's more like chips and like a little bitty chips. So the club head plays better off it, and the ball plays better off it. And for some reason, it has less drag or something on the ball and the club, and to make it more natural feel. But can you imagine, like, if like a DEA agent pulled over that train and 10,000 pounds of white sand on its way to Augusta? What's going on here, guys? It's for the Masters,
yeah,
Justice.
Yeah. I think it's whiter than cocaine. But those bunkers stand out. That it's vibrant. When you're there, and I'm not in the bunker very often at Augusta, but for those who are, like Tiger and some of the other guys, you know, they tell me, you can't get spin on your ball out of there. But it is fluffy. It's a great lie in there. It's not like you get buried, you know, shots in the bunker. Buried lie. But I wasn't there very often.
The lie is you not going in the bunker often.
Wow, Todd, that's a shot.
I had to sneak something in.
Whoa.
I didn't have 5 minutes. I got it in.
Wow. You were almost 12 minutes from a perfect show. Almost.
I took a shot.
Yeah, you did.
I took my swing.
You took a shot. All right, so I mentioned what's happening this day. Oh, this day in sports history. I didn't have that. Todd had his snoreboard, but Paulie's got some.
Besides, it's Al Michaels' birthday, which is fantastic.
Happy birthday, Al.
1967, Detroit Lions fumbled 10 times in one game. Hmm. 10 times, your Lions, Dan. 1953, the NFL policy of blacking out home games was upheld by a federal judge in Philadelphia, district judge in Philadelphia.
What's up, Holmes?
And people don't remember there was a time when if your team didn't sell out home games, you couldn't watch it locally.
Yeah.
1933 in Philadelphia, also, the first Sunday football game was played. It was not allowed to play football on Sunday before that. And then in 1892, William Heffelfinger, his name was Pudge, became the first professional football player. He was paid a $500 bonus for helping out a team called Allegheny Athletic Association beat the Pittsburgh Athletic Club. Mm. So that sellout Heffelfinger.
Yeah. Pudge. I like it. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.